Hello, everyone. My name is Greg, and welcome back to the podcast, my first season. In this podcast, I interview people who worked in holiday/ski resorts, hotels, and cruise ships, and we'll talk about their first season in the hospitality and tourism industry. My guest today and I have worked together before. We worked together in the summer of 1997 in Otranto, Italy. I was au pair. He had a contract. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone, please help me welcome Mr. Loha. Jova, how are you? All is good?
Hi, Greg. How
tutto,
you doing?
Tutto pasto, tu va bien, all is good.
Tutto posto, fantastico. very good, yes.
Yeah, so for our listeners yeah, let's start off with your name because you have a French and Italian name. So are your parents French and Italian?
Yes. So my name is Laurent, which is French. Laurent Minniti is the last name, and that's the Italian part. And I can tell you why they were calling me Jova or Jovanotti.
We're going to get to that.
Not yet.
We're going to get to that because yes, I know you as Jova, but for the start, I was going to call you Laurent. But yeah, we're going to get to that nickname and where it came from. But right now, I was wondering if you could take me back in time to the year where you were, what you were doing for work, if you were a student, and then how did you find out about Club Med?
So, we're talking about the last century here, 1995. Well, 1995 is the first year I started, but back in the mid 80s, late 80s, my parents and my sister, we were GM. So we were, on vacation with Club Med. So we knew about Club Med.
Which ones did you go to?
My sister, those village de case, hut villages. Cefalù in Sicily, Corba in Tunisia, Alassema, Morocco.
Wait a minute. You went to Cefalù as a kid?
I was at the time 14. Oh, 14.
Yeah. Okay, you must have had fun. Okay, moving right along.
A lot of fun. And other, I don't remember right now. So move forward to 1994. At the time I was working for a messenger company and I was at minimum wage. I was broke. I was living at my parents who had a fiance. I was honestly pretty depressed at the time. And my dad saw an ad in the classifieds. They were looking for entertainers, MCs and so on for Club Med. And I was like, why not? I didn't have any particular talent, I was a good MC, I did DJ, and so on, but it wasn't my thing, it wasn't something I thought I would have a career with at the time. So I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. And I sent my resume, not expecting much. And I received a letter from them. At the time, the headquarter was in Paris. And I received a letter and they said, okay, we would like to have an interview with you. Just prepare something that's between 3 minutes and 5 minutes long. And I'm like, wow, okay, I'm gonna have an interview in Paris with Club Med. That's pretty cool. For to be an entertainer, okay, animateur. And I'm like, but 3 to 5 minutes, it appeared to be either too short or too long. I've done some stage work, I wasn't an actor or anything, but it seemed to me like it was a stand-up comedy sketch, length, 3 to 5 minutes. I didn't know what to do, to be honest with you. I had no, I didn't juggle. I didn't know. I'm not a magician. I'm not nothing of the sort. So I actually learned 2 sketches from a very famous comedian at the time in France. And I was like, okay, worst case scenario, that's what I'm going to do. So I get there to Paris and we are 5 of us being interviewed and they take us into a basement and there is a tiny little stage, maybe 6 inches high with one shower kind of light, and one microphone. And they ask, we all sit down around and they ask, who wants to go first to introduce themselves? And that's when I realized, okay, I need to be the first. I need to be the first on anything. And so I just since I didn't really believe in it, I was like, you know, let's get it over with. So I went on stage and state my name, Laurent Métis, come from Marseille. They started to ask questions and so on. And I basically told them, look, I want to make it. I want to be a part of it. I want to go to this, 20 days. I think it was a 20 days, a training camp kind of to become an entertainer. And I'm really interested. And they're like, okay, did you prepare something that's 3 to 5 minutes? And I said, no, actually, I know how to tell jokes. They were like, okay, tell us your jokes. So I told them the jokes in front of four and two people that interviewing us. So six people. That was kind of, you know, bizarre. They laughed. They liked it. And they're like, you know how to do something else? Or do you have any particular talent? And I, for some reason, I said, well, I know how to juggle with chairs.
Jova, can I ask a question? So you just said prior you didn't know how to juggle.
Yeah.
So now you're going to juggle probably the hardest thing in the world.
No.
Three chairs.
Yes.
Okay.
And but the ceiling was very low. So I said, I can juggle with chairs. And I'm like, oh, okay. But I said, but the ceiling is pretty low here. I'm not sure I'm going to be on. That's fine. I said, do you want to go outside? No. We're good. We're going to stay here. We take your word for it. And that was it. And then I received a letter saying,
Atande, wait a step up. Did you actually juggle the chairs in that low ceiling?
Nope.
No, not at all.
They did not ask me to do it.
Oh, I see. Okay. You were, I guess, so they didn't call you on your bluff, so to speak.
No.
Okay.
I totally bluffed them and they didn't call me on my bluff. And they didn't even mention it when I was sent to the training camp, you know, in Pompadour. So I was like, oh, wow. And the funny part is like, one of the guys that was there during the interview, one of the other pretendant, you know, was with me at the training, and he even asked me, "So, do you really juggle with chairs?" I'm like, "No way! I don't even know how to juggle with balls." So I have no idea why I said that. But anyway,
so can I ask a question? So
of course,
this first interview, was this at La Villette in Paris?
No, this was La Bourse.
La Bourse
was the first headquarter they had in Paris.
Okay, and they actually had a small stage in the basement of La Bourse.
Oh yeah, they had everything. They had a very small, tiny place to do interviews, and with a small stage, it really looked like a stand-up comedy kind of room, which probably served as a conference room as well. It's very dark, no windows, nothing. And we were going through the restaurant, actually. There was like a restaurant cafeteria type of thing, and you would go down the stairs to that basement. Yeah, that was pretty impressive.
Once you did your training at La Villette, did you find out at Pompadour? So you do your training at Pompadour. Do you find out at Pompadour where you're going next, or did you have to go home?
No. We did go to those 20 days. We were, I think, 15 of us, 20 days. And I went back home and received a letter saying that, you know, they needed me to go to Saint-Amour, that I was hired. So I was like, oh, great. So my background...
For listeners who don't know, where is that village for our listeners who don't know?
Sant'Ambrogio is a tiny village in Corsica. It's an island off the coast of France and Italy, a beautiful island, and it's on the northwest side. And to go back, I was at home, received that phone call. In my resume, I had worked for a private seniors club in my hometown. So I had experience with seniors. And they're like, oh, okay, we're sending you to Sant'Ambrogio, which is my hometown, Marseille, on the Mediterranean coast, is a night away with a ferry. So, and I knew Corsica. I was kind of disappointed for a first, you know, season, but I was like, okay, it's a, you know, foot in the thing. And I was like, I'm going to make the best out of it. You know, we'll see. And for the first 2 months of the village, there was a private seniors group from Italy called 50 e più, meaning 50 years old and more, that was coming every week. We had about 100 or 200 elderly coming to enjoy the Club Med.
So can I just ask, quick question here. So what's the designation? Yeah. What's the designation of that village in Corsica? Was it family? Was it couples? Was it singles? Before the elderly arrived, what kind of village was it?
It's more, it's not family because there's no kids club, but it's not either, it was bungalows. So it's just above the hut village classification at the time. So it's more families and couples it's not a crazy youngster type of a village.
You had already been on vacation when you were younger to Club Med. So when you arrived, you already knew the hours that you had to do 7 days a week, 16 hours a day. Did you find it hard?
Yeah.
Did you find it hard your first week to not be tired, or were you always tired? And
not at all. Actually, during the interview, it's funny because Jacques Lamarie asked me, said, "Okay, you know, at Club Med, we work 7 days a week." I was like, "Yeah, sure," and probably 9 to 15 hours a day. Yeah, okay. It's basically no vacation during the whole season. I was like, "Yeah, that's fine." And he's like, "You still want to work for us?" And I said, "Oh yeah." I was like, thrilled. I loved it. I won it. During that, that period where I was working as an entertainer for the seniors club, I was working most weekends anyway. I had only one day off. So it didn't really faze me. And then sometimes that day off, I couldn't take it because I was going on excursions, and stuff like this. So it didn't really matter to me working 7 days a week now. So the first week, I actually... Now, you probably know that the first 2 weeks, who's going to stay in the village and who's going to leave, who's not going to make it. And once you pass those 2 weeks, you're good for the rest of the season.
Is it in this village where you acquired your nickname, or did that come later?
It came later.
Later. All right. We'll get to that.
That first season was bizarre for me because, like I said, first they sent me near home, basically. Second, there are elderly coming, and it's not something I wanted to do for the rest of my life. Okay. Then the funny thing is we have the first meeting with Pierre Letellier Gagnon, the chef du village, fantastic man, love him. And he sat everybody down and he's like, okay, so we're going to have these elderly coming for 2 months and, bear with us and this and that. They're very nice and so on. And we're going to have some fun. And I just want to tell you, this is a village where we have a pool. We don't have a flying trapeze like Camarina in Sicily. We don't have a nightclub. We don't have all these things, listing 4 or 5 things, And then it's like, but there's one thing that all these village do not have, and it's a fantastic team like yours. And I was hooked right there. And I was like, okay, I'm down with this thing. That's it. This is it.
Since you already worked with the elderly at home, I was going to ask if you had any culture shock, but since you arrived to the village and the elderly were already there, did you have any kind of culture shock? Or being from Europe already, there's nothing that could shock you?
No, it was kind of like natural. It was natural to me. And I was an entertainer. So, it's the person who has to be kind of liked by everybody, so you're just make, the best out of it. And I knew how to act with these people. And these people, we're almost there. it was very easy. And we had a lot of fun, actually. They were participating in Olympic games and other things.
The beer drinking contest, too?
Yes, we were doing milk.
Got it. Okay.
And they were all Italian, so it was fun.
Is it easy to make the elderly laugh, or was it hard?
Oh no, it was easy. Especially Italians, they love stuff that is very slapstick. So you just pay attention, not to be too brash or out of line. And it's pretty easy. It's pretty easy. You have to try to adapt. To their comedy, their type of comedy. And it was very simple, they're very simple stuff that would make them just laugh and, laugh or happy. That's it.
Since you had already gone to resorts before, Club Med resorts on vacation, did you have in mind that's a job I'd rather be doing than the animator? Or was animator, entertainer the only job you ever wanted to do?
If I had to choose, entertainer, the clown, that was the thing. It, you have three positions in Club Med that are very important: is the chief of village, the chief of sports, and the entertainer. And that was I was a comedian in the family, so so I had to, and I was an MC and a DJ, so it was the easy way for me.
And participating in the shows also was not a problem for you, like the dancing?
Of course, not a problem at all. I had done a lot of GM shows before, and then of course I've been on stage in France. I've done some plays here and there, but again, not being a professional actor, it was really just for fun. And so, it was kind of natural for me.
Did you have the time to learn any new skills while you were there? I mean, did you actually learn to juggle, or did you learn to sail?
Yes, I learned how to juggle after the campus thing in Pompadour. I started to learn how to juggle, but then during my first season, the main activity was sailing. So I started to learn how to sail and took advantage of all the activities that were there. Archery, of course, some others that were available. Yeah, absolutely.
For sailing, did you learn Hobie Cat or laser?
Laser fun. And that was the most I went to.
Do you have any funny stories from that first season that you could share with us?
Funny stories.
Funny appropriate, I should add.
funny appropriate. It was, 14th of July, Bastille Day is very important, right?
Oh, yes.
And like I mentioned earlier, we didn't have a pool, we didn't have a nightclub, we didn't have anything extravagant or, like most village have. And so we needed to find ways to entertain people throughout the day. The chief of village comes to me and is like, "Oh, do you guys have an idea? What should we do?" And so we brainstorm and we decided, okay, since we're going to have this fire and water show by the beach, why don't we do during the day, we do a pirates, attack. Like, we storm the beach and we throw water bombs on the GMs and stuff like this, have fun. It's July now, the village is on full throttle and let's go, we're going to have fun. And, there's many less elderly, so it's okay. So the chief of entertainment, Sylvain Belquier, a fantastic choreographer, was down for it for all kinds of slapstick stuff, and it was okay. The sound engineer, El Lumiere, for the lights, I'm sorry. Everybody was okay. The chief of sports was so we found ourselves, we were probably a dozen. So we do two teams, and that we'll like surrounding the beach, and there were some rocks on one side and so some places to hide. So we dressed up pirates and we start to throw from behind the rocks. We throw those water bombs and other things, and people start to, "What the hell is this? What's going on?" And then we attack, right? So attack, and we come up on the rock, and there is this lady laying down on her towel, and she turns around and she looks at us. Oh yeah, we had firecrackers too. So. Bing, bam, blam, blam, water bombs and whatnot. And we're on top of the rocks and we're attacking the beach. And she turns around, not moving. She turns to us and she's like, "That's it?" Hey! So we were bombed right there as we started. And we were like, "Oh no." All right. So we kept going, but we were just disenchanted, we just threw the thing.
Do you remember the nationality of that GM?
No, I think she was French.
Oh my God. That tracks. Okay. That's right. You do a massive, massive thing. Say two. Okay.
Yeah, we thought it was massive. We thought it was like, oh yeah, we're like six of us here on top of the rocks, and I probably have a picture somewhere. And then just this woman says, "Oh, that's it? Oh, fuck." Okay. Not impressed at all.
I take it you like the shows and you like Crazy Science. If you like Crazy Science, did you have a top three favorite ones that you did?
No, I don't think so. But probably some that we did at Otranto, because I think it was the first time I felt We have new crazy times that we're not going to do the old ones, you know, the ends up and come and other things like that. So I may have a top three of the ones that I don't like, but
can I hear those? Which are they? Is La Bonne Franquette one of them?
La Bonne Franquette or Hands Up are definitely in the top three. I enjoyed doing them when I was a GM back in 85, 86, you know, but you know, when you're in 95, 96, 10 years later, you're like, come on. And we knew that these were already old songs, you know. Sunlight des Tropiques, come on. I was done with them.
So this resort in Corsica, was it a seasonal village? Did it close at the end of the summer?
Yeah, they closed at the end of the summer. They closed in September. And we had a blast, actually. We all had a blast. We actually have a group of all the geos that were there that season. And we chat sometime on Messenger. We've spent a time this year.
Were there any employees or managers that stood out to you in a positive way while you were there?
In a positive way, there are many, actually. The chief, it's my first season, so definitely the chief of village. He was great. He would, you know, lead and let us do pretty much anything we wanted. He was always behind us, if we were doing something a little bit more, you know, too stupid or too brash, he would just say, hey, just take it down a notch, but, you know, don't worry about it. It's all good. So Pierre Le Petit Gagnon was fantastic for that. He was also helping us. He had a cabaret number that he was doing just to help us out. He was like, hey, if you want, I have this What Is Love? You know, the song, What Is Love? What is love? And I'm actually doing a number where I'm on roller skate and I roller skate on that song. And we're like, okay, sure. Let's put it in the cabaret. And he was dressed all in white, white jeans, white shoes, roller skate, you know, white shirt. And he had a red belt and a red bandana on his forehead. And he was just, you know, roller skating. That's all he was doing. What is that? Baby, don't hurt me. And it was funny. But he enjoyed doing it. He was jumping off the stage and, you know, doing these tricks. And we made fun of him at the end of the season, but he took it very, very well. It was very nice. So yeah, Pierre Le Petit Gagnon, definitely a great chief of village I had.
So did you make fun of him by doing an impression of him? Because if I recall, you were very, very good at impersonating or doing impressions of other GMs.
No, I did not. It was a surprise that was done at the very last night. A surprise that was done by the sound engineer, light engineer, what do you call it in English?
Like the
designer?
Yeah, set designer.
Decorator was imitating me. They were imitating all the people that were famous in the village. The sound engineer was imitating, I remember the chief of sport, I think, and the light engineer was imitating the chief a village with the roller skate. So the whole thing was pretty fun. It was pretty cool.
Your season
ends. I did not imitate him.
Your season ends. Do you know where you're going right away? Did you did you want to do a second season, or did you say, I'm good, I'm going to stop?
Oh no, I this is it. I was hooked. I was this is it. I want to continue. I want to make a career out of it. I don't know right away where I'm going to go. But I know probably a few weeks later, once I'm back home, where I'm going to go. So, I'm going to go to in the Alps during the winter in Alpe d'Huez.
That's in France,
second.
Correct?
Correct.
What was it like? What's it like working your first Christmas? Because as you know, in Club Med, Christmas and New Year's are like the most busiest, craziest days. So did you have a problem working your first
second
Christmas?
No, not at all. I worked many during many Christmases, so it wasn't a problem at all. Working during days off or days, holidays, it wasn't a problem at all for me. The thing is, of course, during Christmas, I did... I was the Santa Claus, and I dressed up as Santa Claus, and we had all the kids from all the families that were working at the resort that were coming for picture with Santa Claus, and some kids were cool, they were laughing or smiling for the picture, or some kids were crying, and one kid sat on my lap and he looked at me and said, yeah, not Santa Claus. Santa Claus doesn't wear Reebok and the sneakers. And I was like, okay, get out of here. It was pretty funny. But we did, you know, I enjoyed my second season and then went on to work until 1998, actually.
And which season did you acquire your nickname? And then if you can explain to our listeners who Giovanotti is.
All right. So 1997 in Otranto, the season we met, actually. So I arrived in Otranto before the chief of village, Lulu, and she was scheduled to arrive 2 or 3 days after me. So we're there and everybody's there to, you know, welcome her. So she comes down the stairs of the bus. Hi, how you doing? So, hi, Lulu. My name is Laurent. I'm your entertainment department chief, you know. And she's like, oh, Laurent? Oh, it's you? Okay, cool. Laurent, in Italian, it's Lorenzo. Okay, Lorenzo. So, but there are already like 7 Lorenzo in the team. So I'm going to name you Giovanotti. And in my head, I'm like, I never had a nickname in my life. No, it's never going to stick. But okay, you know, I was like, okay, I'll take it. Giovanotti. Giovanotti, Lorenzo Giovanotti, is a very famous rap singer, songwriter in Italy. He was probably the personality, the most famous personality at the time in Italy. And that's why I did not really, I mean, personally believe in it, because I have nothing on this guy. I mean, he's a very famous person, you know, and so I was a bit intimidated. And so the Italian GOs were like, they got called Giovanotti? Really? Okay, all right. So, and it stuck, actually. So Giovanotti became Jova, to make it short, and it worked. It worked out throughout the season.
I did not know that Lulu gave you that nickname. I thought you made up the nickname.
Correct. Wow. No, not at all. I had a badge already. You remember those, magnetic badge, like, you know, name tag? So that said Laurent, I had to go back to the office and say, okay, I need a new one. So, yep, that's how it became a Giovanotti.
You arrived first to that village, Otranto?
Otranto, yes. I arrived early, like I said, a few days before the chief of village. I believe you were there already. I'm not sure.
I don't know if you recall, that year, the president was only opening summer resorts once they were almost full. So they kept delaying the opening of Otranto. So my girlfriend and I at the time, we worked au pair in Metaponto, because I knew the chief of village there, because they kept delaying the the resort.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know if you remember this. So yeah, we had to wait a long time for Otranto to finally be open. And then finally from Metaponto, we took the train to Otranto. And that was my first time in Europe, my first season. So how did your season in Otranto compare to the one in Corsica?
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. It was my first season as chief of entertainment. And to me, it was probably my best season. It was great. I can say that I had carte blanche, and the thing is that the pressure was on, but at the same time I didn't really have any, because one of the first things Lulu said to me is, hey, listen, I was in Otranto last year we had an Italian chief of entertainment, and we had terrible number. Remember, satisfaction was very, very important to them. You know, these numbers, they need to have those numbers. And I think people were 71% was the biggest number they had as a percentage of satisfaction for the entertainment. And I was like, okay, well, to me, it couldn't go lower than that. So I didn't pay attention to the numbers up until they came up. And I was pleased that every week we had numbers that surpassed all these numbers. And we ended up having a better entertainment number than Camarina that year. So was very pleased about it.
Lulu was big on the numbers, and she very good on getting results. But she had a very good, very, very good team there. I was very impressed by that team.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, the whole team of people was fantastic. Chief of sport. But I think Michele was fantastic as well. Love Michele. Yes. The whole team.
Before Otranto, Michele was my au pair in Playa Blanca in 97. And then I followed him to Otranto to be his au pair, land sports. So it was a very fun time. Do you remember when this was the summer, I think Albanians were trying to get into Italy by boat. And we did this big show at night, and all of a sudden a helicopter shows up, but people thought it was part of the show. Do you remember that? And they were like, wow, you guys, what's your budget? It happened when the fireworks were going off.
Exactly. The helicopter comes in, and it was just at the end of the show, and then the fireworks is starting, and then they had to leave because fireworks.
We didn't know what's going on here. The helicopter was tracking a boat that was just reached the coast right by us, but we didn't know this. We didn't know what was going on. The guests thought it was part of the show, so
correct.
We looked like heroes.
Yeah. It was fantastic. Yeah. What a good season.
In your time in Club Med, did you meet any celebrities in either season?
So yeah, in Otranto, if you remember, we had Swatch, the clock.
Yes.
Who came and did a big conference kind of thing, and this superstar entertainer Fiorello in Italy. He had an five six hour show on TV. The guy could impersonate, sing, dance a little, but also imitate, do impersonations of other people. And I met this very famous person, Fiorello, very pleased, and then others later on in Turks and Caicos. And I met also French personalities in Alpe d'Huez. So met a few people, a few known people.
Of all the seasons you've done, as I like to ask this question just to see if it's similar to my experience, did you find your first season magical because it was your first, or would you say another one of your seasons was magical?
My first season was great. Magical, I wouldn't say magical for the reason I said it. It was close to home. I didn't feel like I was going away, abroad or anything. So it was fantastic. I loved every minute of it. And I thought, this is it. This is my career now. So I loved it because of that. But magical was probably not the word I would use.
Do you have a favorite season?
Otranto by far. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, Otranto. Really? Okay. That's good to hear, because I always thought it was special too. I went without getting paid, and I still wouldn't change it for the world, because it was such a good season.
I can tell. I mean, the team was fantastic, and I think you can gauge a season because of the team. The location itself, I mean, Turks and Caicos is beautiful, of course. I've been to Columbus Island. It's a beautiful village, but it's nothing compared to the team we had in Otranto.
I even remember
the fun we had.
Yeah, and the talent. Because I remember the two archery. I never seen two archery GOs or any GO on the sports team do as many passages as Fabricio. I can't remember the other guy's name. Maybe Antonio. They would show up on my volleyball court like construction workers and start building bricks. And they kept doing. I've never seen a sports team do that much passages on their own. Were you asking them to do it, or they tell you they were doing it? I never.
No. This happened only one because for an entire week towards the end.
They did it a few times. I mean,
but Greg, for an entire week, I had some back problems and I couldn't move.
Oh.
And Fabrizio and Antonio replaced me as the clown, I would say, the entertainer throughout the day.
Okay.
Yeah. They were doing there are pictures of it. I mean, I remember those pictures where you could see the butt crack he was building.
Yeah, but still, even for Olympic Day, and I didn't know they were doing this. They showed up as, you had the red team and the blue team. They showed up as the pink team. They got GMs to dress in pink. I've never seen two guys go all out like this before. And it was hilarious. I'm not going to tell you what they did when it came to the bat game, where you put your head on the bat and spin around, but everything they did was hysterical,
Yeah, it was hysterical. I don't know if you remember with Antonio, the quietest one, I think it was.
Yeah.
Antonio, the tallest guy, and he came to me and said, "Hey, you remember this? We had a show where people were clapping to see if they wanted to keep the number or not.
Yes,
do you remember that show?
Oh, yes, I do.
Okay. And it's like, hey, we're going to do this thing. I'm dressed as a camel, and you're dressed as an Arab, and like a Saudi or something like that. And you just bring me on stage. But instead of waiting for the guest to clap to see if we're staying or not, we ask to the set design decorator to close the curtain. So basically, you do a number, and if every I think it was every 30 seconds, we had lights going on and off, like, you know, blinking, and people were supposed to clap. So if everybody was clapping, they would see the rest of the number, right? So you kept going during your sketch or your number, your song or your playback, whatever, your lip sync. And so every 30 seconds, so I would come. He was dressed as a camel. I had my turban and everything. And there was an Arabic type of song. I had, I think, a seat. I was sitting down, and the camel was just there. So every 30 seconds, people were like, we were grim, you know, and, you know, and people were laughing. So the first 30 seconds, they wanted to see. So, okay, the curtain stays open. And then the next 30 seconds, nothing happens, right? I'm just there, right? So there's really nothing going on. So people start to laugh less and clap less. So after the third one, we asked the set designer actually to close the curtain, so they couldn't see the end. And I was like kind of surprised. No, but hold on, right? And every passage, like every two or three numbers, we would come back. But every time people would laugh, but the curtain would close earlier and earlier until the last passage, where I was doing four of them, the last passage, the curtain opens up, the camel and I are there, people laugh, and the curtain closes right away. So that was the thing. It was really fun. And we really enjoyed doing this one.
Well, I remember those two, like Antonio and Fabrizio, they liked me, but they got me in big trouble my first week there, because at one point, you know, we introduced Lulu introduces the geos on stage, and I go, "Hi, I'm Greg from Canada." And they told me, please, Greg, say Forza Bari when you take the microphone. And my first time in Europe, I didn't know anything about football. I say it, I turn around and look at them, and they're like so happy. They're looking at me like a god. I turn around to my left, I look at Lulu. Lulu is giving me the biggest dirty look I've ever seen. And I'd already worked with her. And of course, she told me after never to say that again, because people from Lecce were there, and Bari and Lecce are two opposing. So I got a history lesson and, you know, Italian soccer, Italian football. But, you know, to them, the rest of the season, I was a god because I said it. But yeah, I never said that again. But
yeah, that's funny.
It was a great time. So did you say that Columbus Isle was your last season?
No, Turks and Caicos was my last. Right after Otranto, I left with Lulu.
Oh, that's right.
We went to Turks and Caicos, yeah.
And Michele went with you guys, right?
Correct, yes. Michele went there. It was a very different team, different guests, I would say. And that was my last season, yeah.
That was your first time in the American zone, correct?
Second time in the American zone. Well, although I did La Caravelle in the French Caribbean.
Guadeloupe.
But it's still French, I would say. So yes. Mostly French. But yeah, this was the first season with the American zone with a vast majority of Americans. Yeah. Very different. Very different.
Well, you've got a good story. Well, that was a very good story, and I really want to thank you for sharing it with us today, because I learned a lot about you, and I didn't know that's how you got your nickname. Do you have any last words yourself to say?
The last words. You're condemned.
Oh, I mean, no, a lot of XGOs say that, and without me prompting them, they say, for anyone listening out there who has never been a GO but thought about it, they say, you know, maybe you should take a shot at it. You should go for it. anything you want. The floor is yours.
Absolutely. No, whoever wants to try, they should try. Yeah, absolutely. I know it's very, very different than what we've experienced, but it might be a career for them. So most definitely, yes, they should try. But thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. And thank you for thinking of me, for for doing this podcast.
Oh, no, I, you know, you always stood out to me in that resort, not only because you made me laugh when you impersonated McKinley dancing in Chippendales, but, you know, you were always in a good mood. You were always smiling. You know, yeah, I never saw you in a bad mood. So, you know, people like that had a positive influence on me, you know.
Thank you.
I did look up to you, really.
Thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Laurent Jovaminiti. We want to thank you for listening, and we'll see you all next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.